Welcome to the Fantasy Golf Degenerates Podcast. Jordan Bell, Bird. Jordan Bell, Bird. Yo, 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 Bird. Yo, yo, yo. I've been getting dirty money, Jordan Bell, Bird. Stacking penny stocks while I'm flipping these birds. Sipping on Ciroc, trip them up with the words. I done popped the Molly and I think it's be my third.
What is going on, DGen Nation? Kenny Kim here bringing you another Fantasy Golf Degenerates podcast this week for the Memorial. As usual, I am here with everyone's favorite Canadian, Tyler Tambourine. Tyler, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing good, man. We missed you. Baroff did a great job, but I wanted you to have you on, talk a little bit about the Bryson stuff. At least today we'll get to go back to it. But yeah, lots to talk about. Glad you're feeling better. Before we get into it, Kenny, I'm going to quickly mention here, just get the housekeeping stuff, but presented by RotoGrinders. Want to make sure everyone knows that, as always, they can go to rotogrinders.com/dgen, get $10 off for a month or $50 off for an annual package. But some big news for this week, and that's why I wanted to start with it, is Lineup HQ is completely free for PGA. So if you haven't tried that out for an optimizer yet, it's definitely the week to do it. Completely free in that sense. RotoGrinders is also going to be giving some FanDuel love. So there's going to be a $5,000 free roll. 150 max, MME, St. Louis cards, STL cards, and I will have a free show on Wednesday that you'll be able to attach to and see. We're going to go through, build 150 on FanDuel, talk about strategies, upside, how to build, all that stuff. So you definitely want to tune in there. And like I said, if you don't have a package beyond that, you can use rotogrinders.com/dgen and get it set up. But yeah, lots to talk about for this week, Kenny. Just had some of the most amazing golf. I think the best tournament of the year so far. The playoff was incredible. What'd you think of this week with Justin Thomas and Morikawa going down to the wire like that?
Yeah, it was a great tournament. But first off, I do apologize for missing last week's event pod. It was definitely, I was a little bit worried with all the virus, corona stuff going around, but not coronavirus. It was definitely the bushels of crab that I bought on Saturday at a golf course. So I guess you shouldn't buy a bushel of crab at a golf course. On July 4th, I bought a bushel, played golf randomly. Me and my boys, we ate it all. I had about a half dozen left. And I put it in the fridge, but they were sitting out in like 95 degree heat for like 4 hours, and I didn't think of it. And of course, the next day for lunch, I was like, why don't I crush these crabs? I'm not gonna waste these crabs. Ate the crabs, and then food poisoning, like massive food poisoning. So I apologize for missing last week. Baroff did an unbelievable job. I listened. He was a great co-host. Tambo, you did great heading the whole pod. So that was good. But I'm back. We're ready to go. This week is going to be so money. And last week, what an event. Oh, my God. That Sunday was just, you know that gif you see with, like, Michael Jackson, like, eating that popcorn and shit? Like, that was me. Yeah. Like, all Saturday, all Sunday morning. I mean, the Morikawa, JT, the ups and downs, Hovland in there, you know, and then you see Woodland coming back up, Streelman in the mix, other guys. That JT, Morikawa, final nine. I thought it was over when Justin Thomas eagled 15. Like, I put it on Twitter. I basically did the cuss right there. You know what I'm saying? Like,
everybody,
like, it's over. You know what I'm saying? And then Morikawa comes in, does his thing, beats JT by a stroke on each of these three holes, and JT didn't do much to help himself on those three. And I think Joshua Perry was correct when he was talking about how, you know, it's not over at Memorial, because, I mean, you know, in my course write-up last week and this week, of course, because it's the same course, I talked about how difficult those last three holes are on the course. And, of course, I didn't take heed to that. And I was like, oh, Justin Thomas, he won. And, of course, he didn't. But, I mean, that putt, those back-to-back putts on the first playoff hole, that was like riding. The only time I think I've ever seen anything like that to that type of ilk would be at the Ryder Cup.
Rory Reed.
Yeah, exactly. That was that, but in like, you know, stroke play form. I mean, like, it was so incredible. Like, when Justin made that putt and just let out that guttural yell. I mean, and it's all you could hear. There was no fans. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, you're like, come on. Like, it was so, I got so hyped. I was like, it's over. Again, I thought it was over. But Morikawa, this guy, 23 years old, but he has the poise of a veteran. Like, you can see it now outside of like 2.5 foot putts. Okay, outside of 2.5 foot putts, he has the poise of like a guy who's been on tour for a decade, who is a consistent winner. And like some of these guys that are in that zone, like, you know, 10-year veterans who win all the time, I don't even think they have the poise that he has. I mean, he didn't let anything get to him. He came through. I mean, like, I would have been rattled if I spun that putt on 18, you know? Like, I would have been rattled. I think most people would have been rattled, especially with what happened at the Colonial where he missed that short putt in the playoff then. And to do what he did on the first playoff hole and make it on top of JT's bomb, that's the number one moment on tour this year, maybe outside of Tiger's win in Japan. You know, I mean, like, it was just such incredible golf theater. I mean, I really hope that a lot, you know, and it was just perfect timing for this too, with no sports on, the ratings up for golf on a whole each and every week. I mean, this is what's going to bring the fans, the casual fans, to become weekly fans, to watch every event, to see these young boys just doing their thing. It was so incredible. What'd you think of it?
This man's over here talking about Tiger in Japan. I'm talking about that might be the most exciting thing I've seen since Tiger wins the Masters. Yeah, I was loving it. I'm chomping at the bit here trying to talk about this thing too with you, because, man, if JT is my, you know, Kobe-esque Black Mamba assassin, you know, on the 80, on that hole, dropping that 50-foot bomb, giving all the energy off right in Morikawa's face, their sportsman, their gamesmanship is there, but at the same time, it's competition. So it is what it is. He's got to do what he got to do. He ain't thinking about no dinner that they had a year ago that Morikawa was so thankful for. He's talking about winning right now with a 50-foot bomb. So love to see that. Morikawa, though, if JT is the assassin, Morikawa is the silent killer. Because like you said, the poise, the ability just to do what he had to do down the stretch, he talks about it. Even after when he was interviewed and talked about that 2.5-foot putt, he says, yeah, I know that. I got to get better at that sort of stuff. He said, I'm just still starting to learn. He knows where he's at. He's in full control of what he's doing. Does it mean he's always going to get the results? No. Go back to Colonial. It didn't happen. But in the end, when you think about what he did get done, and now to come out and pull this off in that sort of format, I mean, Ricky's on 18 chilling. He ain't in the mix. Hovland's probably smoking a blunt back chilling with Ricky on 18 because he didn't make
it. Why that dude always look high?
He's always high.
Always looks high.
That's what I'm saying. So you got these two guys sitting out, and I mean, they're really the only thing in the mix. If you think about everybody else, Poulter, 440 feet of putts, Woodland, massive comeback, Cantlay, massive comeback. These guys just showed up and were, you know, Seifert dropping birdies from 160 feet out after going into a creek. Like, all this stuff. Yeah. I love Hovland. We're going to get to him this week. I still love that guy. But I'm just saying, you know, my new favorite player, I think, and I got to just denounce Ricky, is JT. I'm not going super results oriented with Morikawa, but I've always loved JT. I've always mentioned him with Rory and Rom. And, you know, I think I'm over Ricky now. I got to move on. Ricky's my dude. He'll always be my dude. But, man, JT, just too good. And I'm talking about this guy when he didn't even get a win. So that's just telling you what it is. I think JT, we know it about him. He has a bright future. It's nothing to do with that. The bright future is with Morikawa. But the second statement I'll make is that Morikawa, again, very results oriented, very sample size esque, where we're going super small here. But call Morikawa out of those three, Wolf and Hovland. Just so much upside. I just see it, man. Like, if we're talking about who could be a number one in my mind, it's Morikawa and not, you know, then Hovland. Sorry, Morikawa, Gap, Hovland, Gap, Wolf. And that's a hot take. Maybe it's not as far as the other two guys not being able to get there. But I just think Morikawa is so much more likely to do stuff like get a major before Matsuyama and Ricky, for example. Like, things like that I just see him contending week in, week out. And we're going to talk about him for this week, too, where I think a lot of people just automatically go away, and I don't think there's any reason to. So any other thoughts, Kenny, on that, or did we just hammer it out?
Yeah, when it comes to Morikawa, I mean, you could say right now that he is the best iron player in the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that is something to say for a guy who's basically a rookie. And the thing is, like, when you take, he jumped to 13th in the world golf rankings this week after the win, but you know, he only has 25 qualified events, and the divisor in the OWGR is 40 events. So he's dividing between 40 events and all his points he got. That's why he's 13th. If you make 25 events the divisor in the OWGR, he is number two in the world behind Rory McIlroy. You know what I'm saying? This guy is incredible. I agree with you. I sort of slept on Morikawa. Like, I didn't believe enough. I've been a Hovland guy the whole time. But the dude made me believe. I mean, what he's been doing is incredible. And now here's the thing. That was a big story. But there was a big story before the tournament started last week. And we're going to talk about Koepka and Bryson and that tweet that Koepka put out. If you guys didn't see it, I don't know how, but it was basically Koepka, you know, the whole thing about Bryson the week before, messing with the cameraman, being angry about that. Koepka went ahead and put a tweet out. It was Kenny Powers, basically like roid rage, you know, when he like messes with the cameraman from, I forget what show it was on HBO, the baseball
Kenny,
show.
Kenny Powers.
Yeah. Oh, is that the name of the show? I don't remember. I never really watched it.
What is it, Eastbound and Down or whatever?
Maybe. I don't remember. But, I mean, the thing about it is, basically, Koepka was insinuating that Bryson's using steroids. And now here's the thing. Like, you know, it really bothered me when he did that. Now, what I said on Twitter was, you know, I thought that if Koepka actually just went out and said, I think Bryson's on steroids, that would have been better than his tweet. I think I was wrong about that, too. I think Koepka just needed to keep his mouth shut. Because there's a couple of reasons behind this. Like, to do this to a fellow person on tour, like, you know, basically somebody you work with, I mean, that's just a dick fucking move. Now, here's the thing. I can understand people calling Bryson out for slow play. I can understand people calling out Bryson for being a fucking whiny bitch sometimes, like what he did with the cameraman, what he did a couple years back with the handshake and stuff like that. I can deal with, you know, people calling Reed a cheater. I can deal with people calling Kuchar cheap. You know what I'm saying? Like, or I can deal with people calling Sergio a fucking douchebag. Like, I can understand those things because there's like documented stuff about that. Like, we all have seen that happen. And so it's like documented. It's out there. It's in the public. So if you want to talk shit about that, I got no problem with that. And Koepka's done that in the past with Bryson with slow play, Rory with the majors. And that's why people love him, because he loves to be, you know, he says what's on his mind. And we see Rory doing that a little bit more now, too. But the issue I have with this is there's no evidence of this. There is no evidence. What I think Koepka was doing was being a fucking little bitch-ass motherfucker, like somebody who in high school or in grade school, who wants the attention for himself when the attention is going somewhere else. I mean, he's being a little bitch boy. That's what it seems to me like. He's like, Bryson's getting all this attention. It should be to me. You know, I am the shit. So look at me is what I'm feeling about this. And like, that's just a fucking little schoolgirl type shit move. And I lost so much respect for Koepka this. And not only does this make him look bad, it makes the tour look bad. It can act, because I mean, there's more eyes on the tour right now than there has been. You look at the TV ratings, they're sky high compared to what they usually are at this point in time. And yes, a lot of it has to do with there's no other sports, but that's the key. You're getting a lot more of these casual viewers. And the thing is, these casual guys, they like the long ball. That's why, you know, Bryson's getting the attention that he has. You look back at when Tiger first came on the scene, he was hitting it 20, 30 yards past most people, just like Bryson is now. And that's when, you know, and then he started winning. And so, you know, that's when everyone jumped on board, you know, and the heyday of the PGA Tour, when the ratings were through the roof every time Tiger played, you know, and the thing, and you look at other sports. You look at the steroid era in baseball. That documentary just came out with McGuire and Sosa and Barry Bonds and all that. The ratings were sky high because everyone loves to see people hit the ball far. I mean, that's just an American thing. And that happens in golf, too. So you bring all these people who are casual fans watching this, and they're like, wow, this guy Bryson. And the thing is, we are in this bubble. okay, the people that – most of the people that listen to this pod, most of the people that gamble and play DFS, we're in a little bit of a bubble, okay? And I know a lot of people in this bubble, they hate Bryson. Okay, that's cool, whatever, that's fine. But that is not – I don't think that that is the whole image of Bryson as a whole when it comes to the casual fan. Casual fans want to come in like, this dude's hitting a 380 in the air. I got to see this. And they like that, and they're tuning in because of that, especially these last 4 weeks or 5 weeks that Bryson did his thing. And so what this does is it puts a little damper on that, and these casual fans now question, if they've seen this tweet, they're questioning, like, well, is this real? Is this what happened in the steroid era in baseball? Is Bryson really a cheat? I mean, and that brings the momentum that the PGA Tour and Bryson have down, and it also fucks with Bryson's chicken, like fucking Marshawn Lynch said, don't keep your chicken. He's fucking with it because this is messing with his brand. You know what I'm saying? Like, Koepka is a well-known, high opinionated golfer who is, you know, that everyone listens to, and then he's saying that Bryson does steroids. That's going to hurt fucking Bryson's brand. That's a bitch move. He's fucking with his money. You know what I'm saying? That is a dick fucking move. You are fucking with another man's money by doing that shit. You know what I'm saying? That is so fucked up, you know, with no proof. Not a single shred of evidence. You are fucking with a man's money. You are fucking with a man's livelihood right there. And I know, oh, golfers make a shit ton of money. Well, he could make fucking more. Bryson has his brand, and now Bryson's fucked it up himself a couple of times by doing some stupid shit with the cameraman and stuff like that. But, I mean, this can really hinder him if this is going to be a black cloud over his head for fucking ever because of one thing that Brooks Koepka said. It was a bitch move. Fuck Brooks Koepka. Now, don't get me wrong. I will still roster him, and I will still bet on him. But fuck that dude. I've lost so much respect for him because you are fucking with another man's money. If someone comes at me and fucks with my money, I am fucking fighting back, and I cannot wait. They better be fucking paired together, and Bryson better whoop his fucking ass. Tambo, what do you think?
Impossible to follow that, but let's just say this. Shooks Koepka. Got my man Shook over here. Jeez, you're fired up over some Brooks Koepka. I think a couple things, though. Let's back it up for a second. One, he don't work with them, so he can say whatever he wants, in my opinion. He don't work with them. They're independent contractors, but what I want to say to that point before you can come in again hot is this. I don't really like backing up. I don't like doing something like that in a game of golf because golf is hard. And what happens? He puts that thing out there and then busts out a 41 on the front nine. So the problem when you do stuff like that is you got to be able to back it up. He shouldn't have said anything because can Brooks back it up? Yes. Does he really need to with four majors sitting on his shelf at home? No. Has he done that before with the six-pack comment and bust out the pitcher and said, ah, you're right, I only got a four-pack. What do you got? That's fine. That's the fun.
That's like fine. Said, I got no problem absolutely. With those. I got I'm no
just
problem
saying,
with that.
That's why I'm with you. I'm just saying I don't care enough. I'm not really a lover or hater of either of them. I care about who can make me money. So to your point, will I roster certain guys? Yes. Will we talk about Bryson and Brooks this week? Yes. I just, like you said, don't say something if you can't back it up. And we'll see. He doesn't really need to back it up. So he should have just not said anything. Let it go. That's why you see a guy like Rory, JT, those guys. I talked about it on the pod last week with JT, and he mentioned it and said, listen, you know, at first I was thinking this is a little bit interesting. You know, what's going on here? Do I need to be worried type thing? And then he said, honestly, I realized that Bryson's playing some amazing golf and I just got to play better. That's what that's what should be at the forefront of your focus, of being able to be zoned in on what you need to do. Worry about yourself. Like you said, Marshawn Lynch, worry about your chicken, worry about your game, get after it yourself, go out and play better. Because yes, the guy's going to be bombing out there 380 and doing whatever, but can you still close him? Yes. There's been guys that have been on him. You know, he might not have won last time out if it wasn't, you know, for a few bad days for a couple other guys. We talked about Webb, right? Not getting it done when he had to down the weekend stretch. So there's guys that are still going to contend with him. Bryson still has some stuff to prove as well, but to call him out for steroids, there's just no point. I don't understand why I would do that. It makes it exciting for us as like the, you know, inner fans, like I said, in that bubble to hope to get it, but then PGA can't even give us the right groups for this week, and we don't get to see them together after all that.
I didn't even look. Are they not in the same group?
No, they botched it hard, man. They left them
so
separate.
It's so dumb.
It's dumb. I don't know why they're not doing it. You got the whole world watching. Oh, and already, and God, I know it was coverage issues. Now, being Canadian, I got lucky. We, for the first time in the history of life, got the coverage. Our provider, almost like our sports network, this does TSN, stepped in and gave us the coverage. So I was more than happy to have that versus looking around on an app to go try and find it or stream it or do all this stuff. People said they were having trouble with that, but that's TV contracts and shit. I get that. But to put a group together, and they got groups out there. I think the other one is Mickelson, Rose, and Lowry. Like, Mickelson's funny, but Rose shot plus 10, missed the cut. Lowry, who cares? Won an open. Good for him. And we capitalize. I'm just saying, I don't care about that type of stuff either. So get the groups right. That's one thing you can just do and get right. And I'd be a lot happier. But hard to follow your Shooks Koepka act, because I know he's got you real fired up. But
he does, man. I mean, the thing about Koepka is you got to worry about that shit biting him in the ass. Like, you know, when you say something like that, that shit can bite you in the fucking ass. It reminds
me
of the story.
He has mentioned, though, multiple times, though. He's mentioned multiple times about how he's earned the right to say what he wants to say. And again, if it's the right or wrong thing, that's for us to judge and be the public on, and it's whatever. But he obviously doesn't care. And he feels that with four majors in his back pocket now, he can say whatever he wants. And he's mentioned it a few times about it's his duty now to speak out on certain conversations. I mean,
I agree 100%.
And I know you said
no issue with that. I got no issue with that. But there's no proof. There's nothing there. And to question a guy's integrity in a game that is based on integrity, that's so messed up. And it's just going to fuck with money.
Let's see Bryce walk up on him then. It's going to
bite Koepka in the ass. I mean, it definitely could. It reminds me of the story. So, you know, I was waiting tables at my restaurant before I got this new job. And this old man, like 85-year-old man, comes in with this beautiful, you could tell Eastern European, like 25-something-year-old woman, you know. And one of my friends, she was waiting on him. I was like, well, you know, she's probably a Russian prostitute, because there's a big Russian prostitution ring in my area. And before, you know, I know you guys at home were like, Kenny, how do you know that there's a Russian prostitution ring in your area? Don't ask questions you already know the answer to. Okay. So, like, going on based upon this story, like, I tell the girl, so the waitress, that, you know, she's probably a Russian prostitute. That's what's going on. And so later on, you know, that server, she goes into the bathroom with one of her friends, and they're talking by the sink, whatever. This is what she tells me. They're washing their hands, talking by the sink, and they're talking about that table with the old man and the Russian prostitute, maybe Russian prostitute, and it ended up not being a Russian prostitute. That's the whole thing of the story. You know, they're talking, and she's like, she tells her friends, like, yeah, that girl's definitely got to be a prostitute. She's definitely got to be a whore. And guess who walks out of the stall right when she says that? It's that girl. So what ends up happening is we find out later that she is actually the owner's, like, niece. And she calls in and complains. And the girl, my friend, she got fired for that shit. So be careful what you say sometimes. You know, be careful, because that shit will bite you in the ass. And I think this is going to bite Koepka in the ass. Like, the thing is, like, if he went about it and, like, just was telling his boys, people on tour, like, yeah, I think Bryce is on stage, that's fine. But to put it out in public like that, like she did, that shit can get you in trouble. All right, I think we've spent enough on this topic. So let's go into our listener league from last week. The winner was N Muko won a Gup's Corner avatar. We'd love to see that. I love to see that there. He won with 575 points. He started off with Patrick Cantlay, 31% owned, who came in seventh. Morikawa, of course, the winner, 20% owned. Streelman, who was one of my favorites last week, even though I wasn't on the pod, he was in my article. He was one of my cash game cornerstones. He was 10% owned, finished in seventh. Corey Connors finished 39th, 6% owned. Billy Horseshoe had a nice little comeback on the weekend, 5% owned, finished in seventh. And Russell Henley, who everyone liked, and I didn't believe in, and I didn't play, and it cost me because he finished seventh at 9.06% owned. Tambo, what do you think about the lineup?
Yeah, shout out to Riku, man. Everyone knows him on Twitter. He wins a bunch of money. He just had a bunch of parlay set over the weekend for MMA. Big-time follower, been around for a while, crushes everything pretty much, does well. So happy to see him get the W. He'd messaged me on Saturday that was going to be a little sweat for it, and he ended up closing it out. So nice to see. Lineup's pretty good, man. Like, Cantlay, Morikawa makes sense at the top. Didn't really need Justin Thomas the way this thing built out and held on. Like you mentioned, Streelman was popular, but got the job done. Billy Ho Train was nice to see. We talked about that. Baroff was trying to talk me off him. He actually did talk me down off him a little bit, but, you know, only cut him down by 5 or 10% in overall weighting. And then we talked about Connors and Henley. Henley had just had some great approach coming in, was hoping that it would continue, and it kind of did. I wish he was here for this event. He's not here this week, but overall solid lineup. He's already joined up for the Fantasy Golf Degenerates Listener League for the year-end contest, and we'll have more details on that soon. And then also he's got the three-man this week. So we lost to the listener last week, which was a first time in a while. So nice to see that. And that was even a four-man, so good job on that. And then this week we'll get Riku into the event as well.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the guy who beat us. What was his name? I think it was
Schwab. Schwab 72.
Yeah, Schwab 72. So solid. He beat us. He actually crushed us by like over 100 points. So yeah, good for him. All right, so let's get into this week. The PGA Tour is once again at Muirfield Village, this time for the Memorial Tournament. This is the first time the tour has played back. Has played the same venue in back-to-back weeks since the 50s. A quick meaningless stat about the last time this occurred. Five of the 11 golfers that finished top 10 the first week finished top 10 again the following week. And that was via the GOAT, Mr. Pat Mayo. Now, I'm not sure how much different the course played that time, but there will be some differences this week compared to last. The rough should be at least an inch taller. They're saying 4.5 inches. The stimp on the greens will move from 11.5 the 13.5 or more, and the normal tee boxes and pin positions for the event will be used. All right, so Muirfield Village is a 7,450-yard par 72 with four par threes and four par fives, most of which are reachable into. There could be one that's going to be a little bit too long. Off the tee, golfers will see tree-lined fairways that are above average in width until about the 300-yard mark. Off the tee. After that, the fairways get much more narrow. There are deep fairway bunkers and water in play on 11 holes. The water's quite tricky here as creeks sometimes run alongside the entire hole and in some cases cross through the middle of the fairway. We saw that sort of sting Hovland in the butt a couple of times last week. Now, with the wide fairways, you'd think this is a driver-heavy course, but last year it ranked in the bottom 10 of courses on tour in driving distance. Golfers must avoid the trouble that surrounds the fairways, so on many tee shots, the driver will be left in the bag. Now, this could change, though, as reports have surfaced that the course could play very soft due to rainy conditions. Rain is in the forecast every day this week, starting on Wednesday. So Wednesday through Sunday, thunderstorms in the forecast as of now. We're recording this, 6 o'clock Eastern time on Monday. Now, if this is the case, Bombers could be more likely to break out the big dog as they won't have to worry about the rollout, thus making the fairways a bit wider than they already are. Also, like we've seen the past year or so, these young guys aren't afraid to pull out driver on courses where in the past driver was rarely used. If the fairways are missed, thick 4.5-inch rough will make the approach shots into these smaller greens very difficult, though they'd rather be in the rough than a fairway bunker. The bogey or worse percentage here after hitting a fairway bunker is close to 60%, well above tour average. The lips on these bunkers are huge. Now, leaving the ball below the hole on approaches is important here, as many of the greens slope from back to front. Now, we saw last week they were just basically tapping these putts that were downhill above the hole. And that was with an 11.5 stimp. I mean, imagine that now this week with 13.5, 14 on the stimp. I mean, there's going to be some three putts. Golfers that hit over the greens will have very difficult chips. They hit it deep and the pin is in a back location, which I think we'll see on the weekend. Definitely. It's almost an auto bogey or worse. Now with the possible wet conditions, it might be a little easier than usual to hold these greens out of the rough. The softening of this course from rain can drastically change the difficulty. In 2015, the course was soft and the average daily score was under par, making Muirfield Village the 23rd most difficult course on tour that year. Now, in 2013, the conditions were dry and the course was playing fast and firm. That year, Muirfield Village was the 6th most difficult course on tour. The greens are bent grass and they're usually firm, once again, depending on the weather. Once again, water and sand come into play around the putting surface, and the greens themselves are somewhat hilly, undulating, and multi-tiered. The final three-hole stretch is very difficult with a long par, as we saw with Justin Thomas last week, with the long par three and two very long par fours with danger everywhere. Since the fairways are fairly easy to hit, this course is definitely an approach shot-driven course. course. We saw this in full effect last week as Morikawa and JT finished first and second while being first and second in strokes gained approach for the season. Finding golfers with good iron play and a good short game could be key this week. Tampa, how are you going about this week with everything?
Yeah, it's one of those ones we've talked in the past about, Kenny. It's, you know, it's major-esque. I think I saw today the stat that, you know, forget what, you know, your value is on OWGR or the rankings and all that stuff. Who cares what your take is on it? But that is how they measure strength of field right now. And at the bottom line is this is like the strongest ever for a regular PGA Tour event, over 800. So it is a major. It's pretty loaded. I think there was more stats on that I can't remember that was like comparing to the Masters and other majors. So extremely loaded field in situations like this. And then on top of it, we've got the soft pricing. So, you know, you try and have a little fun, get a little bit of engagement, go and put some pricing out there. Everyone rips it to shreds. But I think the bottom line was, you know, I forgot a little bit that they would have this event set up to, you know, have these prices set up where they can fill 177,000 millimaker at 17 or 18% rake or whatever. So that makes for the way they priced it a little bit more interesting. I also forgot they love just to jam like 75 guys under 7,000. And that's interesting as well. So the one thing I want to point out, and we've talked about this in the past, is with the softer pricing like this, I don't know why people hate on it so much. I guess I try and look to play the plays that I think are the better long-term plays and not just the flavor of the week or flavor of the month and pricing values and all this. I just want to play whoever I feel I have the best edge with. And you kind of naturally get contrarian in that sense. And the reason I say that is because another thing people do that I find is a big mistake is they wonder about ownership. And to be honest, when you have a field with this soft of pricing, and especially this time around, because we've got the craziest narratives ever. We got the beef that we just, you know, went on and on about with Bryson Brooks. That's one thing. You got Tiger coming back. You've got a unique event where people are playing the same course 2 weeks in a row. That never happens. You got all the recent form of just coming off of the coronavirus break and getting back to a restart. So there's just so many narratives out there that everyone's going to be playing everyone. And what tends to happen is by Wednesday, people are like, oh, I'm going to pivot off of this guy to this guy because he seems like he's going to be popular. And in reality, they're pivoting off of like a 17% owned guy to like a 13% owned guy. And yes, 4 points edge, but it's not really that. Play who you want to play, divvy it up elsewhere. Obviously, you don't want to put the three highest owned guys in your lineup if you're trying to win the Millie Maker, most likely. But I'm just saying in general, you can spread it out, you know, quite a bit and don't get, you know, overworked up about who's the 18% guy versus who's the 15% guy and make your decision based around that.
Yeah, I got you. It definitely makes sense. And I got a couple of strategies here for cash and stuff, but I'll go over that when I go over my cornerstones. Let's start with these tiers this week. We have, of course, in the 10K range, Morikawa all the way to beefy Bryson. How are you going about this week, Tampa?
Man, Kenny, this is by far the hardest I've ever had to make some decisions on, I think, ever. And I come prepared to the pod, but this is one where it's tough, man. Like, I really don't know where I'm at here because, like you said, the three at the top, there's reason to take any of them. And I'm not just going to, you know, pivot because of ownership. First, I'll give my Bryson take. You know, I'm definitely, you know, higher on Bryson than I was at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Game theory move backfired. I think the reason was the course, right? That's a mistake. I'll learn from it. But, you know, when you've got a course with four par fives and, you know, two drivable par fours or whatever you want to call it there, probably not the best time to do it regardless of price or ownership. So I'll take that L. I did. I mean, you move on, right? You just learn from it. Bottom of the line, you know, it could have went differently. It just didn't. So I'll definitely still play some Bryson. The thing that stood out to me after that event was people talking right away about US Open and how it won't work there because he only hit 57% of the fairways. And some guys, you know, were pointing out and making some good points around the fact that, like, how much that strength really helps him chop through that rough. So it's not as big of a deal as you'd think. And then, of course, you come to this course, and it's not going to be, you know, U.S. Open-esque. It'll be thicker rough than last week, but they'll be able to chop through it. Guys were not in the fairway last week at times, and were still able to make their way around. So at just 11-1, I know some people are going to lock him. I'm probably not going to go that far, but he's definitely going to make the pool. Got to go back to some JT. It looks like Rory will probably be the least, you know, for me. I like Rory. But, you know, and he's the best golfer in the world and he came in at a better price. The one stat on Rory that gets me, but it's so small. It's so, you know, whatever. But Justin Ray posted this one, was that after Rory's last three times not coming top 10, he's got a T11, T41, T32. He finished like second, third, and a win. So he kind of gets sick of that shit and he just bounces out of his funk. But when you've got a guy like JT who was right there last week, he's definitely not the type of guy to let this get to him. He'll just bounce back and it'll fuel him to be that much better. And then Bryson, who's just on top of the world right now. I think for me, it's those two. Not as high on DJ or Morikawa. I mentioned, you know, obviously you can go right back to Morikawa. The issue for me is price. and what's around him. Like when you're talking about Webb, Simpson, Cantlay, we're going to get into that next range, but there's just so many guys, and we haven't even talked about the bottom of the 9K range yet. So it's just a personal preference. What about you?
My favorite play is going to be Dustin Johnson in this range. Now let's look back at Dustin Johnson in the last 4 years after a win. So in 2016, he won the U.S. And of course he won his last event played. So in 2016, he won the U.S. Open. The following tournament, he won Bridgestone. He won BMW, sixth the Tour Championship the next time he played. 2017, won Genesis. He won the WGC Mexico the following time he played. He won the Northern Trust Open, 18th at Dell. In 2018, he won the Tournament of Champions the following event, second at the AT&T. When he won St. Jude, following event, third at the U.S. Open. He won Canada, following event, third at Bridgestone again. 2019, won in Mexico, following event, the Players, he came in fifth. This guy runs hot sometimes. And the thing is, when you look at his iron play has been shoddy, you know, and that's why he's sort of been on a downward sort of turn. But the last couple of times he played, he gained 6 strokes with his approaches at the Travelers. He gained 3.1 with his at the RBC Heritage the time before. His iron game looks like he's figured something out. And I'm going to go with him. And I have a feeling that he could be one of the lower owned guys in this 10K range. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to lock Dustin Johnson in. It's probably my highest owned golfer in this range in GPPs. I'll also be playing a little bit of Justin Thomas. Like Tambo said, the guy's just too good. And the thing is, it's funny. Like, I think like he's had in like 13 events this year or something like that. He's either top 10 in every single one or he's missed a cut in 3. So, you know, I mean, the guy is just a machine when he makes the cut. And I don't see him missing the cut this week, especially in a field which is around 22 golfers, 24 golfers less than last week. So Dustin Johnson is going to be my favorite play. So let's move on to this 9K range. And this is where my cash game strategy is going to come into effect. You know, I am rostering three of my 4 cash game cornerstones are going to be in this 9K range. Now, I'll tell you why I'm doing this. Because, I mean, when you look at the 9K and above range, you got Tiger, Brooks, Xander, Rahm, Hideki, Hovland, Webb, Cantlay, Morikawa, DJ, Rory, JT, Bryson. The win equity of those guys compared to the people in the 8K range, Rose, Fowler, Berger, Woodland, Anser, Reed, Finau, Fitzpatrick, Day. I mean, it's night and day. I know the field's strong, but I mean, like, once you get below that 9K range, you're losing a lot of win equity. So with the smaller field and, like, you know, only about 50% of being cut instead of 40%, instead of like 60% being cut last week, I think it could be a little bit more aggressive when it comes to cash. So, of course, since I'm rostering 3 9K guys, I got to go down to the 6K range, which I normally don't do in my cash game cornerstones. And I have a 6K play this week in my cash game cornerstones. So first off, my first cash game cornerstone is going to be Patrick Cantlay, who loves this course. He said in interviews before, you could tell by the play here and how he finished in the past that he does well at this course repeatedly. Of course, his iron game is solid, really good tee to green, lots of birdies, good on par fives. You're going to have to score on the par fives to keep up with everyone because those are going to be the 4 easiest holes. You saw last week, I mean, you know, he was one of the – he came through on Sunday, got a little bit of confidence back after a somewhat poor start for the week. So I really do like Patrick Cantlay. I mean, if you look, he was like, I think he gained in round 4, he gained 4.84 strokes with his approaches. So he sort of found something. And I like that. And I like the way that he likes to course of Cantlay. First cash game cornerstone. Second cash game cornerstone. Okay, the win equity on this guy, probably not as high as the others, but I think he can break through. And that's going to be Hideki Matsuyama at $9,400. Back-to-back weeks where he was top 5 in the field in strokes gained tee to green. Another guy who loves this course, who has played this course extremely well. One of the best in this field in longer par fours. In par four efficiency, from 450 to 500 yards, he's second in this field in the last 50 rounds. Really good from 150 to 175. There's going to be a lot of approaches there. And his around the green game, his chipping has been really, really solid here in the last, I guess, 6 months or so. So I like Hideki as my second cash game cornerstone. My third cash game cornerstone, it's going to be John Rahm at $9,300. Of course, again, another guy who did not play the first couple of rounds very well, but I think he found something on Sunday and is coming back to the same course that he found it on. So that's got to give him a little bit of a good feeling going back on this course. Gained 6.29 strokes tee to green. First in strokes gained tee to green on Sunday, plus 4.31 strokes with his approaches on Sunday. Something clicked for him, and I think he can bring that back this week onto the same course. And the talent level of John Rahm, he's a second or third ranked golfer in the world for a reason, and he's like the 10th highest priced guy in the field. So those guys I'm going with in cash here. And, you know, it doesn't leave that. So, that, of course, it's going to make me go down low in the 6K range. But that's the way I'm going about cash this week, because I think rostering guys in the, as many guys in this 9K range and up, the win equity is so much higher. The winning upside for these guys is so much higher than the guys underneath in the 8K range, especially, that I'm not even going to touch the 8K range in cash. So that's the way I'm going to go about it. Of course, I'm going to play Tiger because it's Tiger. And then I think a lot of the other things, I know you said that you're not going to really care about ownership, but I will this week. Because these guys are so close together in the 9K and up range, talent-wise and win equity-wise, that if you can get one of these guys at extremely low ownership, I mean, the first person, I guess, it's Mayo, again, I'm bringing up the GOAT, he was saying that he thinks Webb would be 6% owned this week after the first glance, just looking at this. And if you can get a guy with that much skill at 6% owned, I think it could be a huge advantage. So I will play a lot of these guys in this 9K range. A lot of it's going to come with the ownership projections that I get from Gubb's Corner and RotoGrinders or whatever, all these other sites. Now, what are you going to do in this range? You got a Tiger, Bitch Boy Koepka. What are you going to do with these guys?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. It's not that I don't care about ownership, but it's like if you're only playing Webb because he's 6%, that's not the idea. You know, I get what you're saying, but then what I'm more pointing out is that people will pivot off of Cantlay and say, okay, no, and not saying that's not a good game theory move. My point is more, you can play them both. You can build different lineups accordingly, et cetera, et cetera. The list goes on. I just mean that it's not going to be that much of a gap that you see where people, and that's just a mistake I see made a lot of the time. So I'm on Cantlay. There's no reason not to be on him. Like you said, the price doesn't make sense to me at 9,800. How, I don't know how he's cheaper than, you know, like DJ, Morikawa just won and Cantlay didn't, but I just see Cantlay at this course coming off a great week. I like that price for him personally. Like Simpson, more the Hovland price I don't get. So he's one that, as good as his tee to green has been the last three, the stat I saw, speaking of Mayo, who you mentioned, posted it out, and then Justin Ray put it back out on top that said it is true that the first time I think ever in the last three, or sorry, the first time ever I think in the tracked era where a guy led three events in a row and strokes gained tee to green, that's awesome.
What do you think about him playing six straight events?
Don't really factor that in. It's more, can he close? And I haven't seen it yet. So the Puerto Rico Open, that was the close. And it's not the curse. I don't give a shit about that. I'm talking just in general. Look who's around him, man. You can get John Rahm for cheaper. You can get Matsuyama. You can get Schauffele, who I'm going to get to in a second. You can get all these dudes. Tiger Woods, I don't care what anybody says. You can get on him too. So look, you got – I like
Cantlay. Are you playing Tiger?
I'm definitely playing Tiger.
Okay.
Tiger's interesting to me only because this – right now, it's Monday. What's everyone going to say? Oh, 20, 25% chalk. They priced them way down there. Everyone's going to be on them. Terrible GPP play because of that price, blah, 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 blah. The point is that by the time you get to Wednesday, he's the exact guy that people will be talking themselves into rows by then. Guy that just shot plus 10 and missed the cut. You know what I mean?
Can you really roster somebody who shoots plus 10? And then it was like 18% owned?
I'm just going to play Woods and figure it out elsewhere. I get it. But, and you know, Koepka might be low or whatever, but my first pivot is actually interesting here because I like Matsuyama, not as much. The guys I really like to just back this thing up and get us back on track. I like Cantlay. I like Simpson. I like Rahm. Woods, whatever. I'm playing him. So that's fine. But the one I like here, my first pivot of the week, is going to be off the hype, your boy, Shooks Koepka. And I'm going to be on to Xander. I don't think anyone's going to talk about Xander. Everyone, you know, it's not a comparison of Xander versus Rahm or one over the other. I still think Rahm is better. But I do like Xander here at 9,200. I think he goes a little bit overlooked. People might forget, but these strong fields are his thing. 14th here last year. You know, decent showing last week. T14 after another guy that had a slow start that had to make it back. Him, Rahm, and Cantlay all made it back on Sunday. And if you want to look at GPP lineups, that will most likely have either one of Matsuyama or Woods there. Back to my point, you could play a Cantlay, Rahm, X, and then use some guys down at the bottom. So that's where I'm at with this range, and X over Koepka will be my first pivot there. I'm not as high on Koepka as some of these people are and the people betting on him and all this. I get it. It's nothing wrong with it. I don't see it there versus the other guys in this range around him.
All right, go on. Let's go on to the AK range. Go ahead, Tambo.
Yeah, certainly not on Rose. You mentioned him. I joked earlier about, you know, I'm not on – Fowler's not my guy anymore, so not on him. I like the next three, though. I like Berger. I like Woodland, and I like Answer. And these are all Answer, Berger, T to Green guys. Woodland found it, got it back, made the huge comeback, came T5th last week. Was good for an E-Tray. We'll get to the betting segment, but I had him 50-1 with the E-Tray on top five. Poulter, my guy, screwed me in that one. He took a nice chunk out of it at the end with another bomb of his 440 feet worth of putting, but we'll get to him. Berger got the win earlier, has been on fire, full control of his game, five straight top tens, including a win. Woodland, just like I said, bounce back. I think he's got it again. Needed that rest. Needed to switch back to that ping driver. All good there. Answer, you know, we've talked about him forever. The price might seem a little bit steep, but I don't mind it. At 8,500, his last three results are 11th, 2nd, and 14th. Two for two made cuts here, and now I think he's a better golfer than the last two times he's seen it. Finau, always got a little bit of love for him. Fitzpatrick, go back to the well on him. T27 didn't really show enough, but I like him. And then the other two here are going to be, you know, Kuchar and Casey. I'll get into in a second, but Kuchar I do like down at the bottom to round up the range. Who do you got?
You know, because I'm going to pepper this 9K range so hard with multiple 9K guys and above in my roster, I'm not going to be able to roster too many people in this 8K range. And I think, you know, Tambo and I were talking before the pod, and he said that I think a lot of people are going to be in that same boat. So there is game theory wise, there is value here in rostering these guys in the 8K, but I'm not going to do it because I believe what I believe. And I could definitely be wrong, and I've been wrong a lot recently, but whatever. This is the way I'm going to go about it. But the guys I do like, I like Woodland. I like his little bounce back. He had so many birdies. He had like after his plus three start, like in the next 41 holes or something, he had like 17 or 18 birdies. I mean, the guy was just on fire, and he came through on Sunday again, and I like his price at 8,600. I think if I was going to go cash in the 8K range, I would throw Woodland in there. But I like Woodland, and I think I might take a little bit of a flyer on Sungjae Im. I mean, another guy, Nicholas Kors, you never really – he hasn't been that consistent here recently, but another difficult track, more difficult than it was last week. And I think the ownership could be down for him in GPP. So I sort of like Sungjae at $8,200. So let's move on to this 7K range this week. And I'll go ahead with the guy who started. I do like Paul Casey this week. I think if I remember correctly, he had a pretty solid finish his last time out. Let me do a double check. Where did he finish last time? Oh, he's 32nd at the Travelers. He was up there before his Sunday decline, which is sort of a normal thing for him. But great iron player. Proximity-wise, you know, you're going to be hitting a lot of from 150 to 175 and 175 to 200. He's good at those. He's good at longer par fours. I like Paul Casey. I like Joaquin Niemann in this price range as well. He's been playing pretty good golf here recently. Iron play is good. He's actually probably one of the best in the field outside of maybe Justin Thomas and Morikawa from 150 to 175 and 175 to 150. He's sixth in 150 to 175 and ninth in 175 to 200 in this field in the last 50 rounds. So I like Niemann. And I'm going back to my last week. You guys missed it on the pod. I did put it on Twitter, and I put it on my article on Gubb's Corner, that Kevin Streelman at $7,600. I do like him. Again, another guy who seems to like this course a bunch. Played well last week, has a couple of really solid finishes here recently. So I do like Streelman in this upper 7K range. Who do you like in this upper range?
Yeah, next pivot for me is right there. I mean, this is the opposite of what I just said, not in a way of trying to go off of it, but you know, Casey Chalk doesn't ever seem to really work out. I can definitely see putting both these guys in your lineup, but I kind of like me some Garcia over Casey in some lineups, right? Make some pivots, put them together in some too if you want. But if I was making a pivot here and Casey's going to be extremely popular, this is one where I could see more of a delta. Like if you could see a 20% Casey and a 5% or a 6%, I don't know if people are going to play Garcia. I just don't think they are. They don't like his around the green game maybe or whatever, but he's actually improved on that. Irons have been solid, makes cuts, 7,800, fair price. I mean, tee to green has been very solid since the return. So people are going to worry that then, if you know, that's the case, great. But if he misses the greens, he'll be like a Corey Connors last week or something. Well, he plays pretty good in the wind in the history. And on top of that, you know, his around the green game has improved. So even if there is wind that picks up or weather, I think he can weather through it, you know, pun intended. So I'll take him. Benny on, I'll go back to just for punishment. Been good at this course and just didn't quite have it last week, but he battled back for us, just missed. So the guys that battled back last week like that, like him, you know, you can see that this is the type of course you can do that at. Benny Ann, Kepka, those guys, they didn't quite get there and make the cut, but then guys that did make the cut and squeak through, the Woodlands, the Rahms, the Cantlays, look where they snuck to, T5, T7, all these finishes. So if Ann can just make the cut, I think the upside's going to be there over the weekend, and we see it in the past, 17th, 2nd, 25th, 11th. Got a solid record here, so I like him. Poulter, I talked about him because he's been making all the putts, but man, he's been pretty good around. I mean, that around otherwise than just that. So I think I'll still use some Poulter here. I do like him. I always like him, and I think he'll be feeling a little bit more comfortable after last week. And he likes the greens. They're not all going to drop for him, but at 7,600, it's not like we need him to be the winner in the lineup. And then the only one other than that I'm kind of debating here is like Streelman Horschel range. Sabatini, go back to him. He had another good week for me. So probably Sabatini be the guy that I like the most here to round out the upper 7Ks. Just based on, we talked last week on the pod, if you're going to play him at 8,800, you got to play him at 7,400. He finished T17, but that wasn't the story. The story was his scoring. He scored huge on DraftKings, and he had, you know, first day was two eagles within three holes or whatever. The last day he had another couple eagle looks that made birdie. Like he was just on fire from a scoring perspective, and it really was all around game. So I'll go back to Sabatini and play him some more at 7,500. Who do you got in the bottom of this range, Kenny? 7,400 down.
I'm definitely going to pepper a lot of these guys in this lower 7K range just because of my strategy this week, playing a whole bunch of 9K and 10K golfers. You know, I do like Horschel. His little comeback in the last couple of rounds, he looked pretty good there. Corey Connors is another guy I'm going to play. You know, the iron game is so strong. And like we've seen last week, I mean, that is the most important part of this course. Now, it doesn't really matter if you don't make a fucking putt, which definitely could happen with Corey Connors. So only GDP only. But if you can be average with this putter, I mean, I like Corey Connors because of the strength of his iron game. I'm going to be playing a little bit of Adam Hadwin. I know he fell apart a little bit on the weekend. But, I mean, I think the way that he's been playing this season, he's had a really strong season, making the majority of his cuts are really good from longer par fours, which you're going to see about six or seven par fours. I think six par fours from 450 to 500 yards. He's fourth in this field in par four efficiency from 450 to 500 yards in the last 50 rounds. He's really good from 150 to 175 as well. I'll be playing Harris English down here. Again, another guy who's seemed to be on the come up here in the last 6 months, been playing really, really good golf. You go a little bit lower, Brendan Steele, another guy, typically a tee to green stud, iron game, usually always strong. And I like Lucas Glover, again, another guy, tee to green guy. His putting hasn't been as good as it was last year this time. He really made a big drastic swing up with his putter. It's sort of, for about 6 to 7 months, it's sort of come back down, but he's still making a lot of cuts. He's still tee to green, still solid. So I like Glover. I might even use him in cash. Who do you like? And Sepp Straka at 7,000 is another guy I would think about here in this lower 7K range. Who do you like?
Yeah, you mentioned a few of the same. We're kind of similar on the picks there. Like you said, Sabatini's one Horschel's one I missed. I'd definitely go back to him some. Take some flyers on guys like Connors. Hadwin actually had a great Sunday, so I really don't mind Hadwin at all at 7,400. I think he might get a little bit popular, and there's some pivots there with English, you know, a couple other guys. Keegan Bradley, you know, good tee to green. People will mention him. Some of the guys I go back to, so, you know, I like Glover, who you mentioned, but, you know, the interesting one, so Scheffler, another one missed it basically, you know, he ended up missing by two this time, but the punishment continues. Definitely try him one more time, I think. And then the one I really like here, so my last pivot is going to be, people have mentioned a little bit about Bubba Watson and going back to the well and too much talent for 7,300. Great record at this course, 10 for 12, made cuts, you know, sixth a couple years ago. So I'm not big on Watson here. I don't know why, you know, people like that. Maybe it's just the price, but I'll go back to Louis. He had a terrible back nine one of those days, and I'll just ignore that back nine. The thing about Louis is the stronger fields, the, you know, the scores like minus 10, minus 15. I'm not sure what we end up seeing here exactly. It should be much different than last week, though. And in those type of events and major fields, I mean, he's got the quadruple second place in majors on top of winning. So I think the main thing with Louis is stronger field, price is 7,300. I'll take some of that punishment and go back to him before I put Watson into my lineups. The other guys here, don't really want to touch Dahman, but I think he's going to pop still. Like I said, I like Glover more there. Dahman just, I don't know what happened with him. Just, you know, two insanely bad rounds and just fell off the rails and went from all these top 20s and good results to that. And I think that goes back to my original point, just with the softer pricing and looking at situations like this, kind of back to the ownership point, is even if Glover is going to be more high owned than Joel Damon, and you could just go back to the well and hope that it all comes back around. I didn't see it. And it's only one round or two rounds of golf, sorry, one tournament. But I guess the thing is like, even if you look at long-term, like you said, that putter coming around, these irons for Glover, like they just all look better. So I'll have to look to get different elsewhere before I just go playing a guy like Joel Damon again, down in this range, similar to Varner, you know, not really high on that. And then just rounding it out, the only other guy I really like here is right at 7K. I might pop on some people's radars, but he wasn't heavily owned last tournament where he came T4, and that's Danny Willett.
Oh, yes.
He's only seen this course one time. Mm-hmm. T27, the course is going to be harder, faster greens, the undulations, all these things that we talked about last
Augusta.
Week. And now, yeah, we're seeing it again.
Augusta.
I think Masters champion at 7,000, you know, and his game has really looked sharp and come back around. So I'm on Willett at 7,000.
Yeah, I like that. I like that play a lot at 7K. I probably like that way more than Straka, and I missed that. But I like Willett at 7K myself. So let's move to the 6K range, and I'll go with my final cash game cornerstone. And honestly, I don't think I've ever had a cash game cornerstone priced this low before. But I'm going Troy Merritt at $6,600. Now, you look at what he did last week. He gained seven strokes with his approaches last week total. Now, if you look back at his previous eight events, that he's lost strokes. So it looks like it could be a one-off. But the thing is, they are playing the same course again. So in my opinion, I think it's more likely that he continues the strong iron play on the same course he played last week than if he was playing something different this week. You have that feeling in your mind, you're playing the same course. And the thing is, like, it's not like he's that inconsistent. He's made 11 of his last 15 cuts on tour, finished 17, a couple of top 25s his last two events, finished 17th here last year. So I'm going Merritt. And again, it's a little bit risky, of course, but I mean, I just want to load up on as many of these 9K golfers as I can with the three I am in cash this week because of what I said earlier. And so my four cash game cornerstones this week are going to be Patrick Cantlay at 9,800, Hideki Matsuyama at 9,400, John Rahm at 9,300, and Troy Merritt at 6,600. That still leaves you $14,900 left to fill the rest of your lineup. I like to be at 15K or above, but I'll take the $100 less this week in this type of field. So those are going to be my four cash game cornerstones this week. Other guys I do like in this range, and I'm going to be rostering a lot of guys in this range who have shown me a lot of iron strength in the last few events. So Max Homa is a guy, even though his results haven't really shown it, he's been exceptionally strong with his approaches here recently. Henrik Norlander, another guy. Now, he might not have been as good with his irons, but still 20th in the field in the last 12 rounds in strokes gained approach. And, you know, really good on longer par fours as well. CT Pan, I think he was second in strokes gained approach last week, either for the final round or for the whole event. Let me double check here. It was actually for the whole event. CT Pan was second in the field in strokes gained approach. So I'll go ahead and use a little bit of Pan down here And I like Matthew Neesmith. Again, another cheaper guy who's been killing it with his irons. Really, really good from 150 to 200 yards in his last few events. Who do you like in this range?
Geez, I didn't expect the merit call. That's, you're trying to win a GPP in cash this week. I know, right?
Like I said, it's definitely a little bit different type of strategy in this type of field. Now, I did it before. I think it might have been the Masters last year or some event where I had Kisner at $6,700.
Masters.
Was it the Masters? Yeah. For like $6,700 last year. And that's because of the way that the field – the strength of the field was and the way how soft the pricing was. And it actually came out and worked pretty well. I had a really solid week that week, and Kisner finished, I think, top 20 that week, if I wasn't mistaken. Yeah. I'm going back to that type of strategy when it comes to these, soft pricing type fields.
I like it. I mean, yeah, that's the thing, right? I think the Kisner caliber is quite a bit better. And he was similar though. He was coming in with hot irons into that. Everything was looking good. And there you go. Like, it paid off, like you said last time. I thought you would have been on Jimmy Furyk down here with the 21 for 24 made cuts. The course toughens up. The score is different, so he's got more opportunity to challenge. But yeah, I like Merritt for GPPs. I like Furyk now. I didn't like him as much last week, but like I said, this type of course setup, I'm going to get back to him. Done very well here in the past. I like some other flyers here. You know, Zach Johnson would be one. Taylor Gooch. Ryan, Matthias Schwab. He's a Euro guy that will get some talk out there, but he's just been on a tear as far as, those events go. So I'll go to him at 6,400 and some GPPs. You mentioned Norlander. There's Tyler Duncan down there. Not much else beyond that, though. I don't really love this range. That's why I said you'll see me sticking maybe one guy down here and then the rest try and balance it out as much as I can. And if I'm using those top guys, I'm not going to be able to get like a Bryson JT lineup that works as easily, right? I'm going to have to move around and go like a Bryson, drop down to Tiger, and then see who fits in with it and go down that way. And that's really it, man. I don't got anybody else down here that I'm in love with. Is there anyone else we missed?
I think we're good. Let's go to our bets there, Tambo. What you got this week?
Yeah, so another good week, actually. Yeah, the Morikawa 33-1 came through. I really didn't expect it. We got so hyped talking about all that stuff. But that was the week saver. More than that, actually, that was a solid pick by me. I had the W with that. And then the Gary Woodland, I only had four picks last week. And paid off quite handsomely, so I'll be good with that. And this week I've just got four more, so I'm not really loving the top of the board. Like the guys that are just the long shots here, I just don't see it as much with this being such a strong field, obvious reasons. But got three at the top here. So I got Rahm 22-1, no each ways on any of these. I got Webb 28-1, kind of an edge. Like I said, I'll use him some in DFS, but I think I'll have more of the other guys around him. So I like him at that number for his upside and capability. Got Tiger early this morning. I think it was as soon as the book opened it up, 30-1. So I was very happy about that. I'll take that number and ride with it. And then Sergio Garcia, 66-1 with the each way top five. I like that. Like I said, just everything that's coming together for him, the caliber, the upside. I think he's a good bet at 66-1 in this field. So a lot of guys at the top of the board, and that just caused me to not be able to go too far down, but maybe add one or two throughout the week. If I do, I'll mention that some of my other shows.
All right, so I'm going to go. I've been doing pretty well with – I've been doing like a favorite bet of the week on Gubb's Corner in my article that I put out, the add-on part on Wednesdays. And last week I hit Streelman top 20 at plus 275. I think I've hit like three of the five that have come by that I've put on the article. So that's sort of been saving my weeks in these sort of poor weeks that I had to start. And the last 2 weeks have been better. So hopefully we keep on moving on up, but I'm going to start with Dustin Johnson at 16-1. Like I said, everything I said about him coming off a win, the guy gets hot and stays hot. So I like DJ. I like John Rahm at 20-1. I'll take that number on Rahm for like a third ranked player in the world. Anytime. I got to go Tiger 20-1. I mean, I'm not going to miss that bet. So I'm going to put that in there. I like Woodland 40-1. Jason Day, we didn't really talk about him, but he showed a lot last week. And that was his best performance, I think, at this course ever. It is a home field event for him. I'll take him at 66-1. And I didn't talk about him either. I probably won't use him in DFS, but I'll throw a little bit of Doc Redman at 125-1 because his iron play, again, has been extremely hot. And this is the course where you know, that is the number one thing to look at. There's no doubt about it. We saw last week as strokes gained approach leaders, first and second, finished first and second. So I'll go a little bit of Doc Redman at 125-1 as my long shot bet. One and done. Who you got?
Couple thoughts here. I don't know who people have left. I know I looked at it for myself finally yesterday just to see what the segment looks like. And I think it ends on 3M. So, you know, if I remember correctly, I was in a daze a little bit. But yeah, JT, Cantlay, Matsuyama is kind of who I'm thinking. And then if you just want to run Tiger out there, now would be the time to do it risk-free. Not risk-free, you shouldn't say that. Now would be the time to risk it because I don't think many will do it because they want to see something first. And if he does end up taking it down and you don't have the ticket or you didn't like the 20-1 that it's down to or 28-1 or whatever you got it at now, this would be a way to do that and kind of have at least something on the line with Tiger and run it out that way. So that's sort of the four guys I'm eyeing in on. I haven't really made my selection yet.
All right, I was going to go Dustin Johnson, but I already used him. So I'm going Justin Thomas this week as my one and done. All right. So you can find me at KendoVT on Twitter. You can also find me at GupsCorner.com. I got my article out there, my course preview, my stats to look for. I also do the little strategy piece this week. It's already out there. Wednesdays, I'll release my Cash Game Cornerstones, which you already know if you're listening, but also my other favorite cash plays in each price range and my favorite bet of the week. Tambo, go ahead.
Yeah, sure. Same as always, guys. Follow me on Twitter at Toetag and Tambo. Hit me up there if you have any questions. You can send DM or whatever. On Roto Grinders, all my work is there. So tomorrow night, do the show with Notorious and STL Cards, going over everything as far as the pool breaks down. We had a great show last week. It was awesome to get on with those guys. That's going to be a feature going forward. And then on Wednesday, I've got my show. This week, it's going to be with cards I mentioned. So just to reiterate some of the things right quick. So rotogrinders.com/dgen. You get $10 off a month or $50 off an annual package of the core premium. Right now, this week, Lineup HQ is free for PGA. So you're able to build all your lineups with it. The video that you'll see will have Cards and I on Wednesday breaking it down. That will also be free. And it will be FanDuel oriented because they're running a $5,000 free roll for FanDuel with 150 max entry. So you can MME for free for a week. See how it's done. See how the optimizer is used. Then you can decide to use the code. It's a great promotion. You can check it out. See everything that way. And then going forward, you guys know that's where all my content's going to be. So again, follow me on Twitter at Toetag and Tambo. Hit me up if you have any questions. Otherwise, good luck this week.
All right. I don't know if it's going to be able to compare to what we saw last week, but I think it might because this field is strong. This tournament's going to be awesome. We got Brooks, bitch boy Brooks versus the whale. It's going to be a great week. Let's win some motherfucking money. DGen Nation.